Hello and welcome to Films That Time Forgot, a podcast where myself and a special guest take a look at overlooked films from the early 80s to the early 2010s. I'm Adam Thornton, your host, and joining me on today's episode is reviewer Nick Bartlett.
Hello.
Now, Nick, for any first-time listeners, I mean, because you've been a guest obviously on previous episodes, but tell us what it is you do.
I write about films for a few different places. At the moment, I'm writing mainly for Critical Popcorn and Film Hounds and the People's Movies.
So now you've seen today's film, and you were the one that suggested it. It's the 1997 thriller Breakdown, starring Kurt Russell. Now, how did you come? First see the film, and why did you recommend it?
So I first saw it when I was younger. Like, I think it's gonna age me a lot, but I went to a car boot sale and came back with like a ton of like VHSs, and this was just one of the ones I got. And yeah, and I just watched it, and it's just a perfect little thriller, really. So yeah, that's why, and I suggest it because yeah, it's just a lot. It's just got a lot going on. It's just one of those things. It's not particularly like ambitious, and it's not particularly like stylish or anything, but it's just a really sort of well told, it's a really sort of simple, slick thriller told really well. And yeah, that's why.
Yeah, because it's amazing watching it. It's you forget that it's only 90 minutes. I mean, there's so much plot packed into it.
It's very, I found it very interesting. It's very interesting to rewatch because it's like the premise kind of could lend itself to a sort of Twilight Zone type style, maybe, you know, like, but I think it's Jonathan Mostow directed it, didn't he? And
Yeah.
it's very straightforward. But it works really well, and Kurt Russell is great.
Yeah, it's funny because Jonathan Mostow went on to direct Terminator 3, and there's some similarities with some of the action sequences in this. They're like a smaller scale version of what he would later do in Terminator 3. But only the only difference is that he seems to work much better, I think, with smaller scale action sequences. I don't know if you felt this.
Well, I don't think I've seen anything else he's done. I haven't seen Terminator 3, but it's, yeah, this is, yeah, I think Breakdown works better for being on a sort of slightly smaller scale, I think.
Because you get lots of sort of practical car stunts. It's and yeah, and it works really well with just a small cast because you've got, I mean, because you've really got Kurt Russell, his wife, and JT Walsh as the main villain and his gang, and that's it really.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I think it's I would describe it as like maybe like Duel crossed with The Vanishing, and like it's a really good like B movie premise, and it's just, yeah, it's very sort of efficient. Just gets in, gets out. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, because the opening, I mean, the opening like 10, 15 minutes or so are kind of straight out of The Vanishing, where you've got Jeff played by Kurt Russell and Amy, his wife, driving along the Arizona kind of roads, and one of the things I like about them is that they have a really good chemistry together as a couple.
Yeah, they're very like they're obviously supposed it's obviously like supposed to be one of those like films where like it's sort of city dwelling couple like out of their element and like I think they get that across really well without them coming across as unlikable as well. Like they get on really well, and they're sort of joking about the sort of the sort of, what do you call it, like the sort of people, the truckers, and
Yeah.
the sort of the way they talk in the desert and stuff, are like, but they never seem like aloof or like unsympathetic, and they don't seem like they take their, you know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not like snooty towards the people, like the more sort of, I guess, working class people they come across, but there is that sort of disconnect, and I think that's quite. It's played for laughs early on, and then there's obviously it gets more sinister as it goes on.
Yeah, because you've got the scene where they pick up the food at the gas station, and it's all like donuts and all like donuts and junk food. And Kurt Russell sort of said, "Oh, that must be gourmet food round here." So you could sort of tell immediately that there's a disconnect between him and Arizona, and it sort of clues you in at the start that he's not from around the area, even though we don't get much exposition about where the couple are from at the start.
Yeah, I read that apparently there was an opening scene that explained what he does, what he does for a living and why they're moving and stuff. And I think Jonathan Mostow like cut it out. And I think there's actually quite a lot of bits like that where for the sake of brevity, they just took stuff out. And I think it really works in the film's favour. Like I know that JT Walsh, apparently when he was given the script, he ended up like crossing out big chunks of his dialogue, and the director's like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, it makes the character better if he's not saying so much. It makes him a stronger villain.
Oh yeah, definitely, because the character of Red when we first meet him is really enigmatic. But before then we get a scene where Kurt Russell confronts another truck driver who almost cut him off earlier on, Earl, at the gas station, and it's really and the tension between them is really good, with the whole, the way it kind of slowly builds up.
Yeah, and again, it's like one of those things where it's like it's not quite as conventional as you might think. Like, he doesn't immediately go for him, does he? He turns out when he just starts joking, he's joking around with him and stuff, and then before he goes into the whole like, what would his radio sign be and stuff. But I really like that's MC Gainey, isn't it? He's like, I know him. He was the guy who flies the plane in Con Air. And he's also the main one of the villains in the TV show Justified, and it's like he always plays like a variation of that sort of character, but like that sort of biker slash trucker character, and like there's something about him that I really like, where he's sort of menacing but also like quite genial about it. Like he's quite happy to be like this horrible guy.
Well, this film makes really good use of American character actors, because you've got J.T. Walsh as the main villain Red, who was in like almost every film from the 90s. He was in A Few Good Men, Outbreak, The Negotiator, which I'm hopefully going to cover later on.
His performance in Outbreak is like one of the best, like sort of one and done like performances, where he just comes in for one scene, just completely owns the film, and then he's just gone.
I mean, he's just one of these kind of solid, dependable supporting actors. He was never a big name, but always sort of turned in a great performance. And he was really good as Red. He really gets under your skin without going too far with the character. And there's also later on, we've got a cop coming up played by Rex Lynn, who was one of the hijackers in a Cliffhanger.
Yes, and he was also in Better Call Saul as well, I think.
All right.
He's very good. I like, but I, we'll come on to that. But like the character, I think the characterization across the board is just really good. And it's like it's one of those films where like, I guess it applies more to like horror films. But you know when the protagonist when a plot point will hinge on someone making a stupid mistake and stuff, and there's none of that in this. And yes, it applies. Yes, it's mainly Kurt Russell, but it's also the supporting characters. So like Rex Lynn is that he's a cop, and you sort of expect him to maybe sort of assume that, the city dwelling person doesn't know what he's talking about and stuff. But there is he's not he doesn't just dismiss him. There is a sort of that there is a sort of an understanding there. And I think there's like pretty much all the characters who are in more than one scene are more granted an intelligence that you wouldn't necessarily expect.
Because with the Rex Lynn character, I mean, I'll come on to it, but I was initially worried. I thought, oh, is this going to be the stereotypical disbelieving cop scene? But then the way it turned out, I thought, oh, that's a good subversion. But what happens is that we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves.
Sorry.
Jeff and Amy set off from the gas station, but unfortunately their car breaks down, hence the title of the film, Breakdown. And they kind of stick a thumb out on the road to get help. And after Earl passes by them once again, we then see a truck pull up, driven by Red, played by, we've said before, J.T. Walsh. And he does a really good job of just portraying Red as this ordinary, nice trucker who would help this couple out to begin with, this really no hint at all of his true nature. And yeah, I mean, I guess it just goes to show what a great actor J.T. Walsh was.
Yeah, I think it's really well judged, that the performance and the writing, because it's like, yeah, he comes across as really sort of down to earth and decent, and he's just like, he doesn't pressure any of them to get in his to get in the truck, you know. There's never like he doesn't try and I think they set it up really well by having MC Gainey sort of there as well. So they think that MC Gainey's trying to get them in his truck. And then, and so they see this other track, and they're like, "Oh, finally, someone else!" And it's the way it all unfolds. It could be one of those things where it's like, "Why the hell are they getting in a stranger's truck?" But the way it's all sort of like structured, you sort of completely understand it. And I think it helps as well that it's Kathleen Quinlan who is like pushing for it. Like she's the one who's saying, "Like I'll go," you know.
Yeah.
So it's like.
So she's not like kind of a helpless sort of woman in distress kind of thing.
Yeah, and Kurt Russell's sort of a bit more hesitant and doesn't really want her to get in the sort of the truck with a stranger, but it's J.T. Walsh suggests that they come with that they get that he gives them both a lift to the nearest like town, and they kind of but initially just go no, we're fine, and he goes okay and just and then just and then goes to leave, and it doesn't pressurize them at all.
So there's actually a perfect out. I mean, they could easily just have refused him and he could have moved on
Yeah.
to another couple.
But then when they're thinking about it, she sort of goes, "Oh no, I'll go, you stay here." And that's basically how the film starts.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think it's a lot better done than in The Vanishing, because The Vanishing, it sort of feels a bit more contrived that the woman has to come across, the main kidnapper who needs help with this car, and so on. And that feels a bit more contrived, whereas here it feels a bit more natural.
I think it's also it's part of the genre, isn't it? It's like in a horror film, everything's going to be a little bit more like that. Whereas this is a thriller, and it's like it's a feel everything feels a bit more sort of natural, I think.
Yeah, also I think J.T. Walsh's performance again kind of fits into that more natural vibe, but at least for the first part of the film, it's a big contrast with, I think, the way the guy's set up in The Vanishing, where he's a more of an obvious villain, even when you first, even in the scene at the petrol station in that film, it's a bit more obvious there's something not quite right with him, whereas you don't get that at all
No.
with J.T. Walsh.
Yeah. I don't want to say too much because we should do the story before I start talking too much. I don't want to, I'll give it away.
No, it's okay. It's okay. But so Kurt Russell waits around for Amy and Red, and when they don't turn up, he then goes to the nearest diner to see where they are. And it's really great where he's sort of Kurt Russell gives a really great performance as he's slowly getting more and more desperate. As Jeff's going around this diner trying to find out where Amy is, asking if anybody's seen her. Because one of the criticisms, there was one criticism that apparently he was unconvincing as playing somebody who was desperate, who was worried for his wife. But I disagree. I think he comes across really well.
Yeah, no, I completely buy him. The whole he's I think he's incredibly authentic all the way through. If anything, I'd say it's a little the only bit that's a little bit unrealistic is when he starts when towards the end where he sort of goes into action hero mode, you know. But for the first half at least, he's incredibly natural. And I think even in the bit in the diner, so like it's not he doesn't he's not waiting. He's not actually waiting for that long, is he? By the car because he looks
No.
underneath and he realizes that something's been cut. Like a wire's been cut, so he gets back in it and tries to find them. But he gets to the diner and he's still sort of in like what do you call it? Like tourist mode because
Yeah.
he asks the guy behind the bar, and there's another instance of like the disconnect between the two worlds where he's like he asks the guy like if he's seen her wife and she's wearing like a Benetton top. And then he starts out at the bar and starts asking around, "Have you seen anyone with a buttoned on top?"
Yeah, it's like a very stereotypical, almost like redneck location.
Yeah, and there's still that sort of it takes a while for it to sink in what's happened, I think, and it's really nicely done. And like but yeah, as soon as he stops, the penny drops that she's not there, I think he's great. He's sort of very flapper, but he sort of gets into a bit of a flap, and he's not like stoic. Even later on, like, he's still like, he's sort of what do you call it? He's working out as he goes, basically.
Yeah, and it's and I think it's and I think again that growing realization. I mean, I think Russell really sells it. I mean, and it's a big surprise for somebody like me who's used to seeing him in roles like Big Trouble in Little China and Escape from New York, where he's more of a cool sort of in
Yeah.
control, or at least outwardly he's the cool in control hero. And here it's the complete opposite.
Yeah, he's not cool. He's great, but he's great in it, but he's not like he's not as laid back, or like, he's not Snake Plissken.
Oh, definitely not. And we see that in the later scene where Jeff drives off and sees Red's truck passing by, and so he follows him. But then when he manages to pull Red over and confront him, Red denies ever having seen Amy before, or him or Amy before. And yeah, Kurt Russell really is good at losing it.
Yeah, and it's that this is what I was t this scene is sort of what I was getting at when I said how like straightforward this the film is, because it's like, and again, I don't know if this is a flaw of the film or if it's a virtue of the film, but I could really imagine this sort of scene being in like a sort of Twilight Zone style thing, where it's like he's pulled the guy over and the guy's like, I'm sorry, I've never seen you before, and he could easily go into like, well, who's is he actually misremembering? Is he like got it confused? Do you know what I mean? But I think the film does it in a very sort of straightforward, direct way, where it's like, I don't think you ever doubt that Kurt Russell's right.
No.
I don't think there's ever, I don't think it's ever even implied that he that to the audience that he's got it wrong.
No, absolutely not. Because I mean, but because as soon as the yeah, because even when Rex Lynn's cop pulls up, it's Kurt Russell's still very clear that Amy, his wife's gone missing, and that Red took her. And yeah, there's never any doubt sort of given that, there's anything else going on, that maybe it's in his mind. Even though the Rex Lynn character does suggest that maybe he fell out with Amy, and
Yeah.
I thought that was the only part that felt a bit contrived. I thought, that's a bit of a weird conclusion to jump to after only having seen the guy just now.
Well, I don't know, because he's pretty manic.
Yeah.
But I would say that I'd actually it is a bit, while it's presented as very sort of straightforward, I think the way that JT Walsh plays the scene is like very ambi like he doesn't there's no like there's no like sinister smile at him. He never tips
No.
his hand the whole way through. He's like, I really hope you find your wife, but I've never met you before. He plays it so like straight that it's sort of it, I, you could easily imagine a film where like you question like, well, is he right? Has he got the wrong guy? Got the wrong guy? And I think I love that initial bit where the initial sort of interaction between Kurt Russell and JT Walsh, where JT Walsh is playing it like he's never met Kurt Russell before, and Kurt Russell is like, there's a point where he just goes up, what are you doing? And it's like, it's horrible.
Yeah,
It's so well done.
because it's just the way he's playing mind games, but he's not being over the top about it. It's just very natural, and it's almost like he hasn't seen Jeff or Amy before. And yeah, I mean, it just shows you what a great actor J.T. Walsh is. That
Yeah.
and again, because it's so easy to play the character of Red as like an obvious villain, but yeah, again, that sort of subtle gaslighting of
Yeah,
Jeff really works.
and I think it works that the bit the cop sort of not taking Red's side, but like, of course you're going to believe the sort of the calm the
Yeah.
calmness, as opposed to the person who's frantically running around a truck trying to find someone. Like, it's like you can totally see it from his point of view that like, and but at the same time, he doesn't write Kurt Russell off. He's not like, this is a crazy person. He's helpful, and he's like, and it's just
Yeah.
like, it's almost more frustrating than if he was dismissing him, because it's like, Everyone's doing everything right, and it's still no good. Like, they still can't find the wife.
And it also really helps streamline the film because there's a version of this film that's like 20 minutes longer where Kurt Russell's in conflicts with the cops about, is he telling the truth or is he just a crazy person? And then there's this whole conflict with them coming in. And it would just complicate the film. It makes more sense to have the cop believe Jeff's story about his wife having gone missing and directing him to the nearest town. To the Tears police station so that he can report her missing and be more helpful. It does help move the film along a lot.
I think it's just it's it's very expedient, the plot.
Yeah, it definitely is. And there's also a nice scene at the police station where Kurt Russell, again, he doesn't have much dialogue, but he's just looking at all these missing person posters, and we can tell what's going through his mind. It's like, oh, my wife could be one of these people.
Yeah,
And
it's
it's
like
just
different.
really great. Again, there's no dialogue, it's just this one silent scene, and then he's back on the road again.
Yeah, it's like the deputy isn't particularly tactful, is he? Whereas, like, if we don't get a ransom note, if we don't, or if or anything, they'll just disappear. It's like, that's not what you tell the husband.
No. I mean, but then again, I don't think these like small town Arizona places are going to be known for their sensitivity. So what happens is that Jeff then goes back to the diner to try and get more answers. He then kind of notices that the guy behind the bar has order slips with customers' names written down, and he tries to grab them out of his hands and ends up being told at gunpoint to get out. Which are kind of like, it's sort of showing that, like, not everybody is putting up with Jeff and they're getting more and more sick of his shit, really.
And it's just the fact that he obviously is coming across as more and more unhinged, which which he would. But yeah, no, it doesn't necessarily, that doesn't give him the slips don't get, that doesn't go anywhere, does it? I
No,
can't
it
remember.
doesn't. I think it's just him being desperate and just trying to get any chance, any sort of grab onto any clue that he can of, Amy's whereabouts.
It's a really interesting film. I think you can imagine, because there's so many bits like that that could like lead down a whole avenue of like subplots and stuff, and it's just nope, I'm not doing that.
Like there could be this whole thing where like the diner owner's in on it, where again, like you were saying beforehand, it's maybe all in his mind. It's a bit, or it becomes like the Jodie Foster film Flight Plan, where the first half of it is really drawn out as to whether she may be imagining her daughter or not. And then the second half of the film, there's a big long twist. But this film, again, just kind of cuts it short at that, and that's all it needs.
It's not particularly twisty, is it? It's like this is what we're doing. I think maybe there's one slight plot twist regarding one of the other townspeople later, but like that's it really.
Yeah,
It's
although,
more, yeah, go
oh,
on.
and even that plot twist is resolved fairly early on. And we meet this townsperson as Jeff leads the diner. He bumps into this disabled man called Billy, who did see Amy at the diner. And he says that she went off in another truck heading towards the river. And he also sort of then implies that the cops were in on her disappearance, which, again, in another film, that would work as a twist, but here it's just a nice bit of foreshadowing that Billy isn't quite as he seems.
I will say the character of Billy is like maybe the one thing I'm not a huge fan of in the film.
Yeah, I think his before his disabled act isn't quite convincing, I don't
No,
think.
I don't know if it's supposed to be 100% convincing, obviously, because what happens, but like it's sort of, I like the idea of the baddies being sort of lone operators, and when there's like more people conveniently placed to sort of plant red herrings and stuff, it all starts to take on the you start to think it's like more sort of wide ranging than it is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I much prefer it just being like two or three very, very competent villains. And I think you get that later on with the with Red's when you see Red's home life and stuff. I really love all that stuff. But
Yeah,
then it's like,
it also kind of adds a human dimension to him as well, which is even more shocking when you consider the kind of character he is.
so I love all that. But when it's like, this guy sort of basically trying to trap Kurt Russell, is when it starts to that bit, that's the bit that feels a bit fake to me.
Yeah, although it's a good thing the film doesn't go too much into that, and kind of keeps it again. I'm saying this a lot, keeps everything a lot more streamlined.
Yeah. And I guess it's to say it's there for a reason. It's there to sort of stop the audience going, well, why doesn't he call the police? Because this guy's just planted the seed that the police might be in on it. So on that level it works. But like,
Well, it works now. There's a later scene coming up where it doesn't quite work, but
yeah, you get
yeah, but it's
that.
still really tense. So Jeff heads off towards the river, but he's stopped by a roadblock, and then he's ambushed. And then he's ambushed by the trucker from earlier.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh yeah, that's him. I don't know why I was going to call him Ed for a second there.
Yeah. I really like MC Gainey just anyway. I really like the bit earlier when he's been intimidating Kurt Russell and he walks away, but as he passes the wife, as he, I can't so as he passes Kathleen Quinlan, he sort of tips his hat at her. You know, like
Yeah.
still polite even though he's horrible.
Yeah, there's like kind of twisted sort of honor even with that character.
Yeah.
But yeah, Earl pulls out a gun and Jeff then with the and then Jeff bursts through the block, through the roadblock, and gets chased by Earl in his pickup truck all the way down to the river. And this is a really great kind of this is the first big chase sequence of the film, and it's really well staged.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the bit in the river is really well done. It's the first bit where it's like Kurt Russell. It's like, how would I cope in this situation? It's like I wouldn't. You know, like up to now he's been a bit of an everyman, and then he just manages to sort of escape. It's very yeah.
I mean, he's kind of like improvising. So he kind of goes off the road, down this slope, all the way into the river. And there's this tense scene where he's like trying to get out of the car as it's kind of slowly sinking. And Earl's taking pot shots at him with the gun. And yeah, it's just a really great kind of medium-sized action scene. And it's all done practically. There's a lot of stunt work. It's funny, I'm looking at the budget of this film, it's actually quite large for. No, it's actually not that large. It's only 35 million,
Okay.
and yeah, and
Guess that mainly went on exploding cars as well.
yeah, that did towards the end. But that's the only real bit of like, that's the only real bit of like large scale action in the film, and the rest of it is sort of like medium sized sequences like this that kind of prove that you don't need to spend like three figure millions, hundreds of millions on. Entertaining action. All you need is just, two stunt guys, Kurt Russell, MC Gainey, two cards, and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also Russell appears to be doing a lot of his own stunts, which is really impressive. When you see what's particularly later on, he does one bit that's like almost like out of a Jackie Chan film.
Yeah, or Mad Max. The bit of the do you mean the bit wait, do you mean the bit on the truck?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's mad. But that's the bit where I'm sort of like, is he just a normal guy? How is he able to do this?
Well, I
But
think it's the die-hard syndrome, isn't it? Where the
yes.
normal guy does have to do something at kind of stud man level, otherwise the film would just take like half an hour longer.
Yeah. It's not, you have to suspend your disbelief, but it's not that, and it's not that much suspending your disbelief, but
No.
yeah.
So Jeff then escapes and pulls up to a shore, and there's a nice touch. He sees a donut wrapper floating downstream, which Amy was eating out of earlier. So that kind of shows that she's close by.
Yeah, and it's good that and then sorry, I'm gonna wait and before I say this bit because it links into the next bit in the plot.
Oh, is this about the 90,000? Yeah,
That
it's okay. You can say it now.
it's a nice little reminder to sort of to pop the whole donuts thing back in your head before that happens, because like there's the he escapes. But then he gets caught again. So the whole chase down the river was a waste of time. But like he gets caught, and rather than killing him, they ask him, they say that like his wife has said that they have a specific number in their bank account. Oh, yeah, first they reveal that Billy is in on it.
Yeah.
You know, you can kind of, that's not a huge
Not
twist.
really, no. I mean his whole disabled act was not really fooling anyone.
Yeah. But and then him and Earl. sort of hold him at gunpoint and get him to say that they tell him that his wife has given them a very specific number that they have in their savings, and if he doesn't say the exact number, they're going to kill him, basically. And I thought this is really well done, where it's like it could so easily have just ended. The film could have just ended there, because there's a bit where MC Gainey is like, he doesn't know, and he's just about to shoot him, and then it's just that offhand comment about the Donut King, is it, or something? What?
So clearly that's some sort of lie that Amy told them when they first kidnapped her, was, oh yeah, my husband's like a big sort of donut business guy.
And that triggers the memory of him saying the thing about the nine. What was the thing about 90,000?
It was like $90,000 or 90,000 donuts. That
Yes.
was like the prize offer.
So that's like, it's just one of those things where it's like, well, I just appreciated the structure of it, where like he's in the river, he sees the rapper, and that's not just for his benefit. That's for the audience as well, to go like, oh yeah, I remember that. And then so now where they have this, it's not like one of those things where you don't need a flashback to when they
No.
said, oh, here's the prize, 90,000 donuts or anything like that, because it's already in the forefront of like our memories and that. And then so it completely doesn't feel too like shoehorned in when he says
No.
$90,000.
And it also kind of shows how smart the characters of Jeff and Amy are, that they're kind of thinking on their feet as to how can they sort of buy some time, so that they don't get shot dead immediately. So they immediately come up with this idea that, oh yeah, we've got $90,000 from my like donut business. And they've clearly come up with this idea separately, which kind of shows, I guess, how they work as a couple.
It's just a nice little touch. And then we go into the next the sort of the bank, not a bank heist, but that sort of thing.
And also we get a big plot twist that Red is the leader of this gang, which has got Earl, Billy, and another guy called Al.
Just the other guy. That the other guy doesn't, I don't think he gets many lines, does he?
He doesn't really. He's just sort of there just to make up the numbers, I guess.
Yes, and that's another really good. JT Walsh is honestly one of my favorite actors. But like this bit with him, where they're just sort of looking at the town and he's telling him what he's going to do, is like, it's so well done.
And he's so nasty as well. Like when he's talking about how he's when he's describing Amy, who he's got captive, it's just really nasty and kind of misogynistic when he talks about, how he's clearly seen her nude, and he's implied. Is there like implied sexual assault, do you think, that he's implying just to creep out Kurt Russell?
I think he's, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's ever really implied that he has actually done anything. I think it's just
No.
trying to get under Kurt Russell's skin, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just to get, because when we see Amy later on, there's no way he could have really sexually assaulted her because of how she's found.
But it's just to show how nasty Red is.
And again, it's not done in an over-the-top way. It's just J.T. Walsh kind of talking about her in really disgusting terms in a deadpan way. Again, it's the nastiness, but done in a naturalistic way, which really gets under your skin.
I really like. I love any scene in this film between Kurt Russell and JT Walsh is just brilliant. I think they've been in. I think they've just. I think they made three films together.
All right.
You're wrong. They did. I think, but only one of them. Yeah, both of them before this. They're in Executive Decision, but where they don't have any scenes together, and they're in Tequila Sunrise, where like
Oh, yeah.
they play colleagues, and I think there's a similar sort of antagonism in that film between the two of them. Where like JT Walsh is like the really officious FBI guy, and Kurt Russell's the more easygoing one who's best friends with like with Mel Gibson, who's the criminal, and like in that film they absolutely hate each other, and there's a similar sort of feeling to these scenes where it's like they really want to kill each other.
Apparently this was the last film released in J during J.T. Walsh's lifetime, because he died not long after this came out.
There's a lot of. I mean, there's I think A Few Good Men as well must have been around that time. There's a I'm gonna
No,
go to oh
A Few Good Men was 92.
yes sorry yeah I've got confused I
The
think
Negotiator.
Jack Nicholson dedicated something to JT Walsh, like, and because
I
that's like his
think
thing.
it was his Best Actor Oscar, because he won for As Good As It Gets that year.
Yes, sorry,
Might
yeah.
have been that.
That's why I was getting confused. Yeah, but there was this, and I think The Negotiator came after, and I think Pleasantville as well was
Yeah,
the longest time. And I think,
he's in Pleasantville, and I think that's his last film.
yeah, but he did like so many films that he, like leading up to his death, and it's like he was just always working. And you know that if he hadn't died, he would still be going. Like, yeah, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes you wonder what he would have done, had he not died, the roles he would have played. Would he have gone on to do bigger, supporting roles in like more kind of bigger Hollywood films? Would he
Yeah,
have moved on into TV? Would he have maybe even had a starring role in TV?
it would have been nice to see him, like, because as much as I love him in this, and I love it, I think he's really genuinely good in this, and I think he's amazing. There's a film called Red Rock West, which like a really good like neo-noir with him and Dennis Hopper and Nicolas Cage, and it's a brilliant, brilliant film. And I think that's my favorite performance from him. But even then, he's like one of an ensemble. I think it would have been great to see him in a really really sink his teeth into a leading role or something, because he definitely could have done. And
Yeah,
like
I mean, he's so kind of magnetic as well.
but it's just one of those things where, like, I think this is probably in terms of like substance, I think this is probably like the biggest role he had, in terms of like sort of the meatiest role he ever had, you know.
Yeah, as playing like the main villain, because he never really got that chance, I don't think.
No. So yeah, but it's good that we got this at least.
Yeah, I mean, so Red then explains his plan to Jeff. He wants Jeff to go into the local small town bank, withdraw 90 million that's been wired from his account in Boston, where he's from, to this small bank, and then give it to them, or else Amy will be killed. And Red says that tells him not to try anything because he's hacked into the police radio, so he can monitor any sort of calls that Jeff makes to the police. But he also implies that he's got the town under surveillance. And whilst there's kind of a tense bit later on in the bank where there's this other customer who Jeff thinks may be working for Red, again, I think they could have done a bit more with that because it does seem like a bit of an empty threat.
I think it is an empty threat. I think it's like it's not he's not I think it, they are actually quite a small operation, which makes it which is what I'm not which is why I'm not such a fan of the whole Billy thing, because it's like I think it's just the four of them, isn't it? There's
Yeah.
and like And yet somehow Billy is like on knew where Kurt Russell's going to be earlier and stuff, but like yeah, I think he is just talking it up. Like, he's not they there is
Yeah.
he's not got any they've got they've somehow got into the police radio, that but that that's sort of legit. You can imagine that being a sorry, I got distracted there. But like, yeah, I think it's all just them. He's trying to intimidate Kurt Russell. He's not actually; they've not actually got him.
I worked that out, but I just feel like the scene, I feel like they could have made more off that tension though, about with Kurt Russell as he's walking into the town looking around to see if there's like anybody there who's maybe working for Red, and maybe they could have prolonged that bit in the bank where he's in the bank with the other customer.
Yeah,
I feel like they could have maybe stretched that out a bit more.
maybe. I quite like I really like that moment though. It's like it's all this sort of prejudice of like this guy against the small town people, and like he just coming to the forefront. You know, it's like this guy looks like he could be in on it because he's a trucker, because he looks from this area, and it's like, okay.
But again, that scene's really well acted by Kurt Russell, which is trying to tell the bank manager that, about Red's plans, but he's kind of stopped by this other guy coming up to ask the bank manager, and he's trying to work and Kurt Russell's trying to work out, is he working for Red, isn't he? And it's here that we find out that Jeff obviously hasn't got 90,000. He's in his account, he's way short of that, so he just gets the bank manager to give him that. And he also, again, this is what I like about the writing, they make him quite resourceful, so they have him like steal a letter opener as a weapon, and they have him trying to find other weapons that he can use against Red when he in the bank.
And there's and all the and they gets he gets the bands to go around the notes as well. which is like, you don't, I think he just sweeps them off the table, doesn't he? And then it's
Yeah,
like,
and the bands have got like high figures written on them. So again, that's to kind of fool the gang into thinking that there's more in there than there actually is.
yeah.
So he then gets picked up by Earl, who initially refuses to tell him where Amy is. And as they're driving away from the town, Earl discovers that there is a 90,000, that Jeff hasn't withdrawn 90,000, and then Jeff stabs him
Yeah.
with the letter opener. And there's this really great kind of, again, another great small scale action sequence where Jeff and Earl are trying to gain control of the car, and it's going from kind of left to right,
Yeah.
and then eventually, Jeff sort of overpowers Earl and ties him up and gets him to reveal that Amy's been taken to a truck stop. But
Yeah.
then we've got Rex Lynn from earlier
Well,
sees
before we get that, we get him trying to get the information out of Earl, which is like one of the nastiest bits in the film, I think, where he's got him like taped up by the throat and he just keeps like breaking and starting and
yeah.
breaking in the car. It's like it's really well done, I think.
Yeah, it's like a kind of subtle form of sadism, and you can tell it's the kind of thing that a normal guy would do at the end of his tether, where he's like, right, fuck this, I'm gonna fuck with this guy. And the way he does it is again by like speeding up and stopping the car abruptly.
Yeah, and it's so it's very satisfying because MC Gainey is so good at playing like an absolute like shit. He's got this shit eating grin, and he's just so horrible. And it's like it's kind of cathartic.
Yeah, but then Rex Lynn comes in to spoil the well, not so much to spoil the fun, but yeah, he's driving past. He sees Kurt Russell driving off, and he thinks, "Whoa, something's going on here." So he kind of stops him, gets him out, gets Kurt Russell out, down on the floor, but down on the ground rather. But then he gets shot by Earl.
Yeah, I think that's another really nice moment, I think, from Pat Russell, where it's like he gets out of the car and Rex Lynn points the gun at him and he just immediately goes, whoa, 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 just throws the gun away. It's like it seems quite over the top, but then you're like, that is exactly what someone who's not used to holding a gun, who's not used to being in this sort of situation would do. You know, he's immediately goes back to sort of the everyman sort of persona, which I really liked.
Yeah, he's like, no, it's not like this officer, honestly, which makes
Yeah.
sense for the character.
And then
And
there's that whole that is I still find it really sort of not creepy, but it's really sort of sinister the way that MC Gainey is like, I'm coming out, please don't shoot me, even while he's getting his gun out ready to shoot the cop. You know, it's like something really sort of calculating and horrible about it.
It's so sad as well the way Rex Lynn dies as well, because we've only seen the character in one scene beforehand, but you know he's been shown to be sympathetic, and he doesn't die straight away. He just kind of slowly is like bleeding out, and we don't even know if he dies,
He might
but
not die. I don't think he dies.
because it's left kind of ambiguous with Kurt Russell shooting Earl dead. And then kind of radioing the help, but then we just sort of leave. We then sort of leave Rex Lynn there on the side of the road, and we don't know, does the help come?
Well, it's Rex Lynn that shoots Earl, isn't it?
Yeah, it
I think
is, yeah.
that's the one that's that
It
the
is,
one
yeah.
sort of that's the one sort of Hollywoody bit in the film, I think. That's the one, because I was watching it and I was like trying to look for, because I know there's so many points where it sort of like that goes the unconventional route, and I think it's the one of the few moments where it's like, okay, that's quite a Hollywood thing to do, where Earl shoots the cop and then Kurt Russell immediately jumps down the bank to try and find the gun that he's just thrown away, and but before MC Gainey can shoot him, he gets shot in the back by Rex Lynn, and it's like that's quite a standard, like it's almost cliche, isn't it? But then,
It is, but it's still very kind of brief, and it's not. Again, I think there's another longer version of this film made where it gets incredibly cliched, where like we know about more about Rex Lynn's background, so on, and it's more like something out of Die Hard.
yeah.
But here, it's just limited to just that one scene, and that's it.
And it's and the way he leaves Rex Lynn is like it's really it's quite I think it's really nice. It's a really, really touching moment where he just sort of goes like he needs an ambulance, so he just sort of leaves him.
Yeah,
It's like amazing. It's really good that you know he's in two scenes and you really sort of feel for him.
and we also get again Kurt Russell showing some compassion, but again, because of his relationship with Rex, because of his earlier relationship with Rex Lynn, which again wasn't really set up that much. It was only in one previous scene, but that's all you need. And so we then go to the truck stop where, again, this is a really nicely tense scene where Kurt's trying to avoid the cops as he's trying to find out where Red is. Again, in another film, this would have been really drawn out, but it's really kind of to the point. And he then comes across Red on the phone, and he finds out that Amy's being held in a barn, in Red's home. And this is where we get the really cool stunt, which is all Kurt Russell. Jeff then manages to get underneath, drive up to get up to Red's truck and clamber on underneath and hold on as Red's setting off. And we see him like trying to keep his grip as the car sort of. As the truck rather is traveling down the road, and occasionally his feet like touch the ground, touch the road, and it reminded me a lot of Jackie Chan doing a similar stunt in Police Story where he's hanging off a double-decker bus.
No, I get that. Yeah, and there's that really cool. There's a really funny. There's that moment where there's a little kid who just makes eye contact with him as they drive past.
But it's just a very brief comedy moment, which. Again, in another film, that would be more stretched out, but here it's just very to the point. And Kurt Russell seems to be doing all his own stunt work for this scene where Jeff's sort of clambering, trying to get closer to like Red's cab, and he's trying to get closer and closer to the gap sort of in between the main sort of body of the truck and the cab where he can hide. And it's, really, really impressive stunt work. And but from
It's a really good like sequence, isn't it? It's like it feels like a bit like Raiders of the Lost Ark with the truck and like almost like you know like Stagecoach like the Yakima Canuck like his stunts in Stagecoach. It's almost like that sort of thing with them sort with the way he's sort of crawling underneath. And like I said, it's very reminiscent of Mad Max as well. But yeah, it feels very. It's one of those stunts where it's like it's not particularly like showy. But you really feel that every move that he's making is like that would be agony.
You can really feel that, and there's something very old school about it because I feel like the late 90s was sort of this period when CGI was beginning to come in, and you were starting to get less of these sort of stunt sequences focusing more on like actors or stunt performers' this kind of physical abilities, and this is just a really nice demonstration of that. I feel like this film came out at is like one of the last examples of that purely when that sort of focus on physical stunts was more of a convention rather than, oh, it's the exception and we're going to make a big thing out of it in the marketing, which you get now with like the John Wick films and all of that, or even the newer Mad Max films.
And we'll come on to it later, but some of the later effects like are so much better for being practical. Like you feel like when things are getting destroyed left, right, and center, you're like you feel it a lot more. It's sort of like
So,
go
yeah,
on.
no, it's okay. So later that night, Red pulls up to his house, and this is where we get a really good insight, a nice insight into his family life, because we see his wife and son come up, and his son really idolizes him, and his wife's sort of complaining about his friends, and we get the sort of dynamic that he doesn't treat her that well, but that his son that he's got a really close bond with his son.
Yeah, it's kind of a lot more disturbing, isn't it, than if it was like if they were just going to like a hideout somewhere. He's just going to his home where he's like is a kind of domestic like life where they're all gonna go in and have dinner together, and it's like it makes it more more creepy than if it was like some sort of like hole in the wall like hideout.
And it also kind of reminds me a bit of what we talked about earlier, The Vanishing, where again, the villain in that has a very stable home life with a wife and kids.
Yeah,
And
he's like compartmentalizing his like personality. He's like he's not a villain at home. At home, he's just like just the dad. He's just come home after a long shift on the road or whatnot,
Because
and
we
like,
find out that his wife actually doesn't know anything about his activities.
yeah, I guess not. I don't know. There's
Because
a bit.
she doesn't know about Amy when they take her
No.
out of the truck, the hidden compartment in the truck, and they say, "Oh, put her in the basement because to hide her from my wife."
Oh yeah, cool. Okay. But she must. There's something because there's that scene where. So after this is where Kurt Russell sort of confronts them in the. Oh no, should we go first? First, he follows the where they're taking the body. Where they're taking Amy, right?
Yeah, the story in the basement in the barn, and then and he also finds out again very briefly through a conversation that Red has with the rest of the gang that they've done this before
Yeah.
to loads of other couples. And is it me or does it imply that they do it outside of Arizona because they say they did it to an Ohio couple, and I thought that meant that they traveled to Ohio, that they were in Ohio and they kidnapped a couple there.
Oh, maybe, but or maybe it was just. I mean, they make a big point early on about identifying like Kurt Russell's car as being like having like Massachusetts plates, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's how they do it. They target people with like out of state plates,
All
and
right.
there. So it's like, you know, like maybe it's someone with Ohio plates that they caught.
All right, because I read it as because the way they said it as remember what we did to that couple in Ohio, I thought that they were truckers going round America and they happened to be abducting couples in Ohio.
That would also be it.
Ohio and then they just happened to be in the Arizona area when they found this couple.
Yes, potentially. I mean, either way, it's not good, is
No, it isn't,
it? It
but
shouldn't be
it's
allowed.
no, oh, definitely not. But I kind of like that they don't give this whole scene where Red explains his gang's like modus operandi. It just comes out with that little bit of dialogue. And I also like how, again, with Jeff and Amy, their whole background and their difficult financial situation and why they're moving from Massachusetts to Arizona, that isn't explained in a big expository scene at the beginning taking place in Massachusetts. It's just, these little bits of dialogue here and there. It really works well to keep the pace up and not having the film stop dead to establish character points. So what then happens is that Jeff then breaks Amy breaks Jeff then kind of breaks Amy out of the no he doesn't actually no he
This
doesn't
is
do
the bit. This
no he
is the
did
bit.
no, I'm jumping ahead here no he manages to find a gun and he breaks into Red's house where we see his son playing Doom interestingly enough.
Well, there's also the bit just previously where it's another indication of like Amy being a bit more resourceful where she plays dead,
Oh yeah.
and it's like it's just another bit of considering how she's off screen for most of the film. It's like you get these little indications that she's like quite that she's really resourceful and she's been thinking outside the box and stuff. And the fact they take her out and she's like playing dead, and they're like, oh well. That's that, which is also quite disturbing. It's like there's no like, oh no, she's dead. It's like, oh well, that saved us a job, which is kind of really nasty. And then they throw in the cellar anyway, don't they? But it's a nice. I think that's a nice touch.
Because it also again stops her from being like this passive victim. There's a sense that oh no, she's actually trying to kind of think of a way out here. It's just that she's limited
Yeah.
by what she can do.
She's not just waiting for Kurt Russell to come get her, but yeah.
Which is also consistent with what we see at the start of the film, because we see that she's quite kind of sharp and witty.
Yeah, and she's got her own. She's got agency of her own. Like, you know, she is her. She's the one who's like, I'll get in the truck. You know, she's like, it's not that she's got a proper character of her own. It's not like, which I think is it's. I imagine there's probably quite a lot of. Thinking about that during the writing process, because like otherwise it is a very thankless role. It is just like, I'll be there at the start and I'll be there at
Yeah,
the end.
and that's it. But I think that there's also potentially another version written nowadays that maybe in gives her too much agency, which would not be realistic to a situation where she would be a lot more proactive in a way which wouldn't make sense with how she's been her condition throughout the rest of the film, being tied up and all that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, maybe. It depends, doesn't it? But like, yeah, I think what we get is really good. I think Kathleen Quinlan, we haven't really talked about her, but I think she's very good in the role as well.
Yeah, she's kind of a really good sort of counterpart. She's a really good partner to Kurt Russell, really. They kind of play each other, they play off each other so well in these early scenes.
Yeah, and it's like it's good because it's like she's not it, she isn't just like a damsel in distress for the rest of it. Like you get a really good impression of her as a character, and then when she's gone, it's like, yeah, it's really it's she's got gets enough to do in the early scenes that you miss her when she's gone.
Yeah, and she also gets enough to do kind of later on as well. But before then, we've got Kurt Russell holding Red and the family at gunpoint as they're having breakfast, which again is a really tense scene because right after that, Red's son then holds him at gunpoint.
Yeah, I think this might be my favorite scene in the film, actually. I love it's so tense, like the fact that when the boy's got the gun, holding the gun on him, and it's like, and like J.T. Walsh plays it really well, Kurt Russell plays it really well, and they're just sort of the eye contact is so
Oh,
very
yeah.
intense, and then it gets it break it. This is what I mean because it break the tension breaks when when J.T. Walsh's wife tells the little boy to shoot Kurt Russell, and that's the point where I was like, oh, is she? Does she know more than she's letting on?
Yeah, it's well, you're wondering, is this desperation, is this aggression? Because it does sound quite aggressive. So you're thinking, oh, was she maybe part of this? But the rest of the film doesn't sort of
Yeah, I
give
know.
that indication because she's kind of ignorant of the
She's been
of Amy.
when they when it's revealed that Amy's in the basement, it feels like she's genuinely shocked. But like it's just that moment. It's just that moment, and that's what kicks off the sort of gun not gunfight, but Billy runs away. He gets the gun, doesn't he? And Billy runs away.
Yeah, Billy runs away, and the other guy, the other guy Al, who doesn't have much to say at all, he gets shot in the
Yeah.
shoulder, and then Kurt Russell then orders them all down to the basement at gunpoint, and Amy gets freed, and again immediately attacks the wife, which if the wife isn't in on it, she's got a really hard day.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, I guess maybe she did know about it. I don't know.
But
All things.
no. I mean, she didn't know about it, but it was just, I think, an automatic thing. I think it was
Oh,
just an
I see.
instinctual thing where Amy just lashed out at the nearest person who wasn't her
Yeah.
husband.
And then there's my absolute favorite moment in the film, which again is like as he leads the bad guys down into the basement, doesn't he? But as
Yeah.
he's about to shut them in, J.T. Walsh turns around and says like he's about to go on this big long speech about like you can run but we'll find you or something. But
Yeah.
before he can finish it, like he just like kicks him in
Yeah, it's like shut
the
up.
face. Yeah, it's just brilliant. It's like that. I
So
really, really,
cathartic.
yeah.
And what I like about it is that Jeff and Amy don't just leave. They make sure that basement door is shut. They put so much stuff on top of it.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like everyone, no one is stupid in this film. I don't think it's like everyone acts exactly entirely consistently with like who they are as a character, you know?
Yeah, because immediately Jeff and Amy run to a trailer just outside Red's house where they try and find the keys to nearby pickup truck, and Jeff tries to call the police, but they didn't count on Billy, who frees and Red and his gang, and then you get Red's truck crashing through the trailer
Yeah,
just before.
that's my favorite effect in the film as well. That moment is so
Yeah.
like it that, that I mean that must be inspired by Duel. Like
Yeah.
it's like the whole thing with the truck being this like almost like I don't know, like it's almost like a creature, isn't it? The way it just sort of like lurches forward and just absolutely demolishes that trailer. And
Yeah.
like yeah, and
And you
then
can tell that stud must have taken up a lot of the budget because it's the only, like, one of the few really big stunts in the film.
big practical stunt, and you really feel it. Like it's really like, yeah, it's got a real weight to it, and it just plows through the trailer. You just see that it basically just demolish it.
And it narrowly misses it narrowly misses Kurt Russell and Kathleen Quinlan as well.
Yeah.
M
Yeah,
must have
I love
been
that bit.
must have been fun for them to film.
Yeah. And it kicks off this like big climactic like car chase, which is
Yeah, so good. You've got, Jeff and Amy in the truck, and you've got then Billy and Al on both sides, and you've got Red in the back.
well, again, there's this is the other thing that I like about defying conventions and stuff, because there's clearly a moment when he's got Billy on one side, he's got the other guy on the other side, and they're both pointing their guns, and he tries that thing where he breaks the truck, and thinking that they're going to shoot ahead and like shoot each other, but he doesn't count with the fact that Red's right behind him and just ram. And it's like, I'm pretty sure that's what they're going for, right? Because he does either there's the whole thing of him looking either side, seeing them pointing their guns, and then he breaks, but it doesn't work because he just gets rammed.
But what I like about it is that it isn't just Kurt Russell killing all of Red's gang single-handedly, because whilst Billy just get run off the road and his car bursts into flames, with Al, he manages to get Red to kind of kill Al, which I liked.
And Al does have lines of dialogue in this bit, but they're just you can't make them out because of his accent. He's just going like
Well, to be fair, he's just generic gang member one, really, isn't he? We used up all the characterization with Earl and Billy.
it's a really and then obviously the truck the truck ends up Billy's death is quite over the top. I'm not entirely sure how it happens. He just sort of swerves across the road and then bursts into flames.
Yeah, I think that's one of the. I think this is where the film does get Hollywood, but it's right at the end, and it's earned itself a few
It's
fiery
definitely earned
deaths.
it.
But yeah, but Al's death, where Red's sort of main body part of the truck sort of comes off, it serves in front of Al, and he crashes through it. That's a really good stunt.
This whole sequence is like really well done.
And then when it's just Red, he pursues Jeff and Amy's truck onto a bridge and manages to almost push them off. And again, this is all practical stuff. And when they're hanging, when the cab of the truck and the truck's hanging and the Jeff and Amy's pickup's hanging off the bridge, and you've got Jeff and Red sort of trying to sort of climb up to the roof of his cab. That's all practical stuff done, I think, by J.T. Walsh and Kurt Russell, it looks like.
There's a bit where I see the Kurt Russell or Kathleen Quinlan like just hanging off the truck, like off the side of the bridge. Probably a stunt person, I don't know. But when they're just sort of clambering up, it's really like it's a really good stunt. It's like it's one of those ones where it's like you don't really think about it too much, but like someone had to do
Yeah,
that.
and I mean, I'm sure there was health and safety, but even in 1997, health and safety wouldn't be what it was now. So, it would still be a bit hairy.
And there's that fight scene between Kurt Russell and J.T. Walsh is also very brutal and very well.
With like lots of kicks and chain whips and everything. You kind of forget how. It's funny watching a lot of 90s action films, you forget how brutal a lot of them were.
And it's like one of the few films I think where J.T. Walsh is like a genuine like threatening. He's physically threatening, like that he's like you'd buy that he would absolutely beat the shit out of Kurt Russell.
Yeah, because he's normally like quite a sort of average looking guy, but here he actually really holds his own with Kurt Russell until he uses the chain, because Red's hitting trying to hit Jeff with the chain, but then Jeff grabs the chain and manages to throw JT Walsh all the way off the bridge onto the rocks below.
But
But
he's not dead.
nope, he's not dead, because then him and Because whilst Jeff and Amy are embracing the pickup truck, they turn around and realise that, oh, Red's just coming to. He was just unconscious. And so Amy then sort of le loses like the releases the handbrake, and Red's cab comes crashing down on top of him, which is a pretty epic death, and it's where the film ends.
I love it. It's like we're done. We don't need any more. We don't need like a little capper scene to sort of show that they're okay. It's like we don't need to worry about where they're gonna go. He's dead. That's the
Yeah, that's all you really need, and that's the end of, and that's yeah, that's Breakdown. What's interesting about the film is that It only made 50 million on a $36 million budget, which is surprising given the fact that it got mostly good reviews. And yeah, I'm just surprised it didn't do as well, and I'm surprised it doesn't get talked more about more.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those films that everyone who's nobody who's seen it has got anything bad to say about it. It's like everyone, if you talk about Breakdown, if it's someone who's seen it, they're like, oh, that's a great film. But like, it's also like, it's difficult. Maybe it's a difficult one to recommend to people. I don't know. It's great. But I think I said this earlier, like, I watched it this is the first film that we've talked about on the podcast where that I had seen before we talked about it on the podcast, and like I watching it today, I was like, okay, I didn't need to watch it. I remembered pretty much every beat, every plot point, and like, yeah, I wonder if there's something it's a if it's a bit too sort of straight for people to like or to really stick in people's memory, you
I
know.
mean, but it's strange though, because Kurt Russell was coming off the box office successes of Stargate and Executive Decision. It wasn't like he was particularly past it as an actor. I mean, he wasn't like a massive A-list star, but he was still a box office draw. So you'd think that, he'd be able to attract enough people to see it. I
Yeah,
mean, I know
maybe.
it came out in May, so maybe it was overshadowed by larger blockbusters like Men in Black.
Yeah, because I mean that's the thing as well. It is great. I don't want to put it down at all. But it's like, it's one of those films where it's like, it's quite small scale, and it's quite the state. Like, it's not one of, it's. I don't know. I don't know. I don't
I
know.
mean, the stakes are quite low though, because all Red really wants is the money from the bank. And the action sequences, although they're very well done, are for the most part quite small scale. Even the climactic car chase is again like the kind of thing you would see as like the midpoint of, say, an action film at this time. It's not particularly epic in scope.
It's just, yeah, I just love it. But I also guess that maybe one of the films you talked about, was it, sorry, it was Stargate, and was it Executive Decision, or was it different?
Executive Decision, which is completely different from this film.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess in Executive Decision, he's not exactly playing an action hero, is he? But like, maybe the fact that he's just very much coded as like a yuppie in this, and like maybe that was put people off. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a shame because it's so well acted and tightly paced. I mean, J.T. Walsh is a fantastic in it. Kurt Russell is great. It's just, yeah, it seems to have got lost in the sort of, again, within the summer releases that came out this year. And it's interesting because I can't imagine this film, even a few years later, it wouldn't be a summer release. It would be released more around about sort of Easter or sort of autumn. It's maybe, I think, too small scale for a big budget. It would be too small scale for a big budget summer release of in like the early 2000s, where we started to get into more of the superhero films like your Spider-Man and so on. And
Yeah.
nowadays, it wouldn't even get a theatrical release, it'd be straight to streaming.
Maybe it's just one of those things where it just fell between the cracks a bit, because it's like it's an action film, but it's not exactly like it's got a lot more plot than your standard action film, and a lot more, and at the same time, if it's people wanting like a gripping thriller, maybe it's a bit too maybe it looks a bit too like actiony, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing though, if you look at the year it came out, like 1997, like May 97, you would have the likes of Lost World, Jurassic Park, Men in Black, which, whilst it's a tight 90 minutes, is still involving aliens and special effects. You've got Batman and Robin coming out, which obviously, I mean, not that Batman and Robin was a massive hit, but it still was a very large scale film that would have taken the focus off Breakdown. And also, I mean, it's an R-rated film, and I'm wondering if that maybe harmed it as well, because I feel like the 90s, and in particular the late 90s, was sort of like the last gasp of R-rated films or films like this made for adults doing well.
Yeah,
And
maybe.
sort of from this point onwards, it starts to become more sort of family oriented, particularly from the early 2000s. You get more like family friendly or teenager friendly films doing better business at the box office, which lasts until today, really.
Yeah, I guess this is a film that's like it might not appeal to younger audiences that much. I mean, it sounds like we both love J.T. Walsh, but maybe he's not that appealing for like.
Nah, you know, like a slightly doughy middle-aged bloke isn't really what gets not really what gets 13 to 18-year-olds
Isn't
in.
that's a sad indictment of the youth of today.
It is. What we need to do is we need to cast more guys like Bob Odenkirk in the Marvel films. That'll right the balance.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's our episode and breakdown. Nick, any final words on it?
Just that I think more people should see it. It's one of those like really good economic storytelling, very good. Like the characters not acting like idiots. You know, everyone, because it's like one of those films where, because you're with Kurt Russell for pretty much the whole film. I don't think is there any point where it's like not told from his point of view?
There's not really this brief cutaways to like some of Red's gang members briefly talking, but it's like very brief.
Yeah, I think it's. Oh yeah, that's the bit where he's in the bank, isn't it? Because that's to sort of cover the fact that he's done something, you know.
Yeah, there's also another bit after the action sequence where he escapes down the river,
Yeah.
where they're I think it's Earl and Al are talking about their plans.
Yeah. But I think it's because he's on screen for pretty much the whole film, you're put completely in his shoes. And it's so the whole way through, you're like, what would I do? What would I do? And it's one of those films where he doesn't really do anything wrong. There's no point where you go like, oh, why'd you do that? What you know? And
Yeah,
like
I stretch out the film for like again another 10, 15 for like another 10 minutes or so.
Yeah, so like it's very slick. It doesn't feel like it's got no sort of it's got no like as what do you call it like sorry, I've lost my words. It does. It's very sort of simple. It's not flashy or anything. But
No.
it does what it does very well, and I think I love films like
Yeah, I
that.
kind of feel like we need more of this in today's landscape. Like we don't get enough of this in nowadays in Hollywood. Like there's so much complaints about overspending in films, and it's like, well, maybe make more mid-budget thrillers like this one.
Yeah, I mean,
Oh.
this feels like if this is, I feel like today, if someone was, this would be someone like, Jeremy Saulnier
Yeah.
making the film like this, and it'd be a lot more stylish. But like,
Well,
that's.
it'd be a lot more stripped down. It'd be like it cost like 5 to 10 million, and
Yeah.
it would be an independent film.
Yeah, but it like, but like, it that's the sort of, if it was today, I think it would have that sort of vibe, and I don't. Th And I'm not, and Jonathan, I think the film's really good. Jonathan Mostow's direction is very sort of straightforward, and it's like, I think it
Yeah.
kind of works to the film's benefit because it's like, there's no like directorial flourishes or anything. It's just like, it's very sort of functional.
Yeah, it's very down the line. It's very much, you know, plot point to plot point. It's comparing this to like Terminator 3, where there's lots of unnecessary comedy, not un unnecessary comedy moments, like Arnold in the nightclub and whatever. You just don't get that with this film. It's very
Yeah.
sort of pared down to just the bare elements.
But I think that sort of works to the film's benefit because I think maybe you don't expect the script and the story to be quite as clever as it
No.
is because it seems so like yeah, it's very straightforward and then like it just gets very good. That doesn't always
Yeah.
be the way of putting it. But yeah, I really enjoy it and I'll watch it every time I see it on telly. It's like well, that's 90 minutes gone.
And that's our episode and breakdown. It's a tightly paced, well-acted thriller. Go check it out. Nick, thanks for joining me. Anything coming up that you want to promote, or can you tell our listeners where they can read what you write?
Well, yes, you can find me on Critical Popcorn, The People's Movies, and Film Hounds. At the moment, I've got an interview that I've done with Bobcat Goldthwait coming out
All
soon.
right.
Yeah, he's did a film called God Bless America, which I think has just
Yeah.
celebrated 14th anniversary, had its 14th anniversary or 15th
That's
anniversary.
a really good film. Lots
Yeah.
of really dark comedy.
Yeah. So I spoke to him about that, and so that'll be on Critical. I did that for Critical Popcorn, so that'll be on there soon. I'm covering a couple of TV shows for Film Hounds. So I'm covering Poker Face and Love, Death and Robots, which just dropped. And I'm doing something for the People's Movies. I'm covering the Second Sight release of The Nice Guys and the Arrow release of Narc for the People's Movies. So they'll be out soon as well.
Yeah, that's another film that I think you're covering on the podcast.
Oh, it's a very good one. So
Yeah,
I've.
Joe Carnahan, isn't it, who did
Yeah.
Smoke and Aces?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the things I feel like. I think Narc was it, it might have been his debut.
I think it
Like,
was because Narc was 03.
and I love Narc, don't get me wrong, but every subsequent Joe Carnahan film I've seen, I've liked less and less. So
Yeah, I mean, Smoking Aces I liked, but I think I've not really seen much of what he's done after that.
he did the film adaptation of the A
Oh
Team.
yeah, I did see that. Yeah, I didn't care for that.
No, but yeah, I think Narc is definitely worth a watch, and I think that would be a good one to talk about on here because Ray Liotta is obviously amazing, but I think Jason Patrick is great in it as well.
Yeah, another name you don't hear that much about, Jason Patrick.
No, I don't know how much of that is sort of his own doing. He seems like, yeah, but anyway.
Films That Time Forgot is available on all good online platforms such as SoundCloud, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. But if you want early access, you'd subscribe to my Patreon, 40 Film Reviews. That's THORNY Film Reviews, where you can also access my written reviews on the latest cinema releases across the UK. And you can join me next episode, where I'll be covering the 1996 Mark Wahlberg, Reese Witherspoon, incredibly messed up thriller, Fear. And until next time, keep watching.